We're live and we're local. It's a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, July 25th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, we'll get details of the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines. The fun starts tomorrow. We'll also hear about Marms and Meek's product release party tomorrow evening at Amalga Distillery. Alicia Smith from Imagination Station will be here to tell us all about Make It Mondays and more. And Mainly Marathons will call in to tell us what they've been doing running around Juno this week. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Quick look at weather. Rest of today is mostly sunny with highs in the mid-70s, and tonight, chance of rain. Tomorrow, chance of rain, still warm, around 70 degrees. Looks like the sun will be back for the weekend. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of Pueblo women, children, and their allies called for environmental protection and Native rights at the Conference of Western Attorneys General annual meeting held Tuesday in Santa Ana, Pueblo, New Mexico. Demonstrators wanted to let Speaker U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke know they're against fracking in the state. Native and environmental groups are working to protect Chaco Canyon, a sacred site and ancestral place, from oil and gas development. Eileen Shendo, Jaimez, and Cochiti held a sign with the words, "Pueblo women say no." Shendo says, as a voting citizen of New Mexico, a Pueblo woman and mother, her message to federal officials is to listen to Native women's concerns.
So we had a few individuals set up pretty much within the hotel that were at a point able to read out the United Nations Declaration on Indigenous People and some of the other, like the mission statement of, you know, Department of Energy, and in a way that would allow for a reminder, you know, especially as all these governors were convening and tribal leaders to talk about, you know, this industry and what it's doing, but also a reminder that our natural resources and environment were needing to be protected.
Shendo says tribal sovereignty and treaty rights need to be included in discussions. National Native News reached out to the Interior Department for comment, but did not hear back by deadline. Twitter posts from Secretary Ryan Zinke's account about Tuesday's meeting said there were talks about offshore mineral leasing, water resources, and the reorganization of the Department of the Interior. A Santa Fe organization is canceling a controversial reenactment of Spanish conquistadors. The Santa Fe New Mexican reports stakeholders for the pageant, known as the Entrada, concluded months of negotiations with an agreement to retire the annual event, saying it does not adequately represent the true context of oppression and conflict leading up to and following the Pueblo Revolt. Protests by Pueblo people say the event glorifies a painful and bloody history. The group has not decided on how to replace the reenactment. A hunger relief group has a new report out on food insecurity, which applies to people who may have enough food to eat today, but are not sure about food for the near future. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
In South Dakota, six counties have food insecurity rates above 20%. All six are on or adjacent to tribal lands. Hunger relief advocates say these are the worst areas for people who aren't certain where tomorrow's meals may come from. Jennifer Stensis with Feeding South Dakota says residents at or just above the federal poverty level are able to get some assistance to feed their families.
But then you have another group of people who are at the 185% of poverty level that are, you know, are just making enough to get by. They make just a little bit too much to qualify for any assistance. But what we find is those are the people that most often need our help, is because they're getting help nowhere else. They make just, you know, a dollar too much. They've got a little bit too much here, a little bit too much there, and puts them in this category of, what do? We need food.
Stensis says those families are forced to rely on food banks.
One of the biggest talking points, of course, is that number of those that are no longer eligible for food assistance, or that number keeps rising. So this year we're at 40%. It keeps going up a little bit more in most counties across South Dakota. So we're really focusing on that, trying to understand that issue and see where we are needed.
Stensis says Feeding South Dakota tries to fill in gaps with services like mobile food pantries and commodity distribution efforts. A new program involves the head coaches from South Dakota's two Division I football programs to raise awareness and funds. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwantung Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by Humboldt State University. We know what it means to be rooted in community. You can get your master's degree and amplify your voice without leaving your community. Online program applications accepted from August 1st to 31st at humboldt.edu/socialwork. Support by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, gateway to tribal colleges created by and for American Indians, accredited and local, with certificate programs to master's degree programs. Info at aihec.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest today is calling in from Haines, where things are about to get very exciting. Welcome to the show, Jessica Edwards.
Hi, Shelley. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Through the phone waves. You're on the show today to get us pumped up about the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines this weekend, and it's the 50th Southeast Alaska State Fair, so were you around for the first one?
No, I was not. Nope. That was a long time ago. I didn't live in Haines then.
So who puts on the fair and what's your role in it?
So the Southeast Alaska State Fair is a private nonprofit organization, 501c3. It has been such for many, many years. And so there's a group of staff that are dedicated to this nonprofit and a great board of directors and about a million volunteers. And that's what makes the fair go round.
And what's the history of the Southeast State Fair? What do you think the first one was like?
Well, it was very small. So fairs were sort of getting started in the late 60s, and they were sponsored by the Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. There was this sort of surgence of 4-H and that kind of homemaking and gardening and home ec type activities. And our local fair here in Haines for the region started out just a Haines Haines-based event, and it was started by the Choquette Valley Homemakers Association. So it was a lot of baked goods and some small animals and whatnot, and it just grew and grew every year. In the 70s, the fair acquired the fairgrounds property and started barn raising and having a lot of fun building facilities, and there were many, many iterations of the fair over the years, but it's become a vibrant community, regional organization that puts on a great event for all ages every year.
How's the Southeast State Fair connected to the Alaska State Fair?
The fairs are actually all private nonprofits. We call each other sister fairs, but we don't have any connection financially or in governance. In the past, fairs were connected in the sense that the USDA would provide grant money for these fairs to operate, but that's not been the case since the 80s. So it's basically just in name at this point. We're a similar type of organization. The Alaska State Fair in Palmer is a very big fair for the state of Alaska. They see about 300,000 people through the gates over their 12-day fair, and of course in Haines we only have 2,400 people in the whole town, so we're in a much smaller scale. But I would say in terms of vibrancy and fun and what there is to do at our fair, we also we have a lot to offer. So small does not mean not worth going, for sure.
Oh, and I know a lot of people come up for the fair from Juneau and from other places, I'm sure. So it'll be more than 2,400 people, I'm guessing.
We estimate that we see between 5,500 and 6,000 individual people at the fair each year.
Wow. And how is this Southeast Alaska State Fair similar or different to state fairs down south? Is there anything unique about Southeast State Fair that you think is different from one that you might go to down south?
I think, you know, in Southeast Alaska, we don't have the same kind of agricultural base as, say, where I grew up in Kansas City, where you have lots of big agriculture, lots of farming, a lot of animal husbandry. People are doing that on a very small scale here, so we look different. We just have a different appearance. We have some animals certainly on display, but it's not the giant livestock barns like you would see in one of those other fairs that you would see down south. And also, we have different kinds of activities here. The Southeast Alaska State Fair really reflects, I think, the kind of history we have in Southeast Alaska, the kinds of things we like to do, that we do for work. We have a logging show. We have a fisherman's rodeo. You're not going to see those things in fairs down south. And the kinds of foods that we have to offer, It looks different. It feels different. It really reflects Southeast Alaskaners and the way that we live, eat, work, and play.
Did you say fish rodeo?
We do have a fisherman's rodeo.
Fisherman's rodeo? Awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. You do a survival suit donning. We have a fun contest that's good for all ages where we toss herring back and forth, kind of like an egg toss, and a lot of different buoy throwing activities and kind of different skills, fishing skills.
You ride a bucking salmon?
That'd be fun, but no.
All right. Well, that's enough background stuff. Let's get to the fun info. When is the fair starting and how is it going to kick off?
We start tomorrow. I am so excited. So the gates open tomorrow at noon, and we run Thursday, July 26th through Sunday, July 29th. Great days to come. You can get here on a plane. You can come for a day, and it's wonderful. It's so much fun that we have lots of ferries over the weekend to bring you up. So basically, gates open around noon every day, and we go into the wee hours with concerts every night. There's concerts every day. We have three stages.
Wow.
We have rides. We have games for kids. We have contests every day. We have there's just a lot to do. Pretty much our entire property is packed with fun.
Yeah, I noticed there's going to be a lot of music on the program. In your opinion, what are some of the must-see concerts?
Well, I can't leave out Thursday, even though we have a shorter program of music on Thursday. We have a great start to our day. We have Chilkat dancers starting off and welcoming the people to the fair to open up. And the men of note will sing the national anthem, which I always really like to hear that. We have Stonefed, a great rock band that's playing later as a closer on Friday night. It's actually going to do a great set on Thursday afternoon. We have a square dance, and then we have Southeast Got Talent Contest, which is basically, I love it because it's the people who are attending the fair who get to be the main stage entertainment. It's super fun. We usually have 20 contestants, and you have 5 minutes or less to make an impression on the judges, and then we have a $400 grand prize that goes to the best youth or the best adult. And then we close down the night with a great rock band that's been touring up in Alaska every summer. They've come to see us a lot, the Lax, and they've become a local favorite. So I think Thursday is not to be missed, truly. And then Friday night, I guess highlights, it's going to be a great day. We have a wearable art review at 5 that people really adore. We allow designs that have been shown in other communities. We invite them to send them up for a second showing at the fair. And then we also have some original work that's debuting at the fair for wearable art. We have a circus that's coming up from Oregon. So it's a 9-piece group, and they're going to be doing all sorts of circusy things up in the air and on the ground. And then we have music for the rest of the evening. We have Leche de Tigre. That's a kind of a Latin-inspired dance band. It's going to be really fun. Ron Ortiz and The Truth is a blues soul funk act. We have a 9-piece funk group from Colorado Youth Orchestra. We're really excited about them. And then Stonefed, the rock band that was playing on Thursday, will also close on Friday night. And Saturday is just as great. I mean, I encourage people to go and look at these acts on our website. Take a look. We have lots of links. Kind of highlights for Saturday night headliners will be Anna Hea. She's coming from Hawaii. She's a pop singer. She's wonderful. She's got just an amazing voice. And the McDades, folks that have been to the Atlin Music Festival may have seen the McDades. They're a Celtic group. We'll see another set by Leche de Tigre, the Latin dancing band. And then we're closing up the night. We've never done this before, but I think it's going to be really fun. We're going to have a DJ dance party with the circus. They said they're going to put on a circus dance party for us. And I think that's exactly like it sounds, and I'm really excited about it.
that sounds amazing. And since you mentioned the music and several of those bands, I'm actually playing all music from the Southeast Alaska Fair lineup on the show today. So we'll get to hear a little preview of some of those concerts.
Fantastic. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, you've highlighted some of the most popular events. What are some of the best kept secrets, something that someone might pass over on the program, but you really think they should check out?
If you're a music fan, I think one of the things that's really great is to check out our park sessions. We have a little quiet area that's the park stage is over by the kids' playground, and we have the headliners are all doing these workshops, and they're smaller venue, an intimate opportunity to sort of get close to the band and listen to them talk about what they do and also play some music, but in a really tranquil environment. So it's not the big, loud show at the main Payson's Pavilion venue. And that's a really great thing. I see they're under-attended a little bit, and we try to push people over because it's a really great way to relax and just enjoy the music in this more intimate setting. I also want to bring to people's attention that we have a wine bar this year, so that will be fun. It's also over by the park. It's by the community garden and a nice place to just sit down. And it might be a hot weekend, so a nice place to sit down and get cool. Don't miss McPherson Barn. That's a nice place to interact with animals if you're coming up with kids. Children just get pretty wound up at the fair. I think it's very exciting. My daughter's always exhausted after fair weekend. But the barn is a nice place to go and just get some different energy. You know, you can calm down and see the horses. We have goats. We have chickens and ducks. And it's one of the things I do every morning at the fair is I go out, I get to the fairgrounds, I do my rounds, and I open the barn and I just walk through and I smell all the animal smells and I hear the quacking and see who laid an egg and all that. It's really fun. So, there's just so much magic here. I think it's just a great place to walk around and see what you stumble into. You know, I love it. It's happy faces everywhere.
I know you're the executive director for the nonprofit that organizes the fair. What's keeping you up at night?
That's a great question. Just the length of my list at this point. You know, it's going to be a long night to get open, but I feel like we're in good shape. You know, I had some things that were keeping me up. I guess one of the new things this year is that we built a giant slide. It starts about 30 feet in the air, and it's about 60 feet long, and it's a giant tube. And so that was a major project to undertake, and that definitely kept me up a little bit in the lead up to the fair. But it is so fun, and we've been testing it all week. And so that's off the list of worries, but I'm really excited to hear all of the people in the tube going, woo, throughout the fair. I think it's going to be great.
No, that does sound like fun.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any tips for navigating Haines during the fair? It's a small town, but it's a big influx of people. So what's your advice to folks who might be worried about long lines at the coffee shop or big crowds at restaurants?
You know, I would just say one thing you can do is plan on eating at the fair. We have 21 food vendors here. We have coffee. You can't get breakfast here necessarily, but if you can get up a little bit earlier, you can hit the breakfast spots. They'll all be open early. You might avoid the crowds that way. If you're camping, you might think about bringing food to cook at your campsite. We have a nice weekend. There's lots of camping available in town still. And then, you know, thinking about if you want to go out to a restaurant, hitting them right when they open. You'd be surprised how early some of the places open for dinner. A lot of times on big weekends, I tell my family to go, you know, go get there at 4:30, and then you'll have a better chance of getting a table and getting in and out. It is a big influx of people. It's a busy weekend. We are a small town, and so people are definitely ramping up what they do in order to try to accommodate all the visitors. It's a very important weekend to our community economically, so the businesses are super grateful for your business and that you're coming and supporting our community. But, knowing that there will be people around and planning accordingly a little bit is a good idea.
And likewise, I imagine Haines and local businesses in Haines, do they provide pretty good support or sponsorship for the fair?
They do. We have incredibly good sponsorship from local businesses. They know there's a lot of pride around the fair being in Haines. It's a great event, and people really take ownership here of making sure that the fair has what it needs to be successful and to be an event worth traveling to. So that is definitely something that we enjoy.
And where's the best place to find out more information?
I would push people to the website. We have a pretty good website. It's www.seekfair.org, SEAK fair.org. And there you can see programs. You should see the schedules and the programs that describe all the different contests and activities throughout the weekend. We also have a page on our website about getting to Haines. And we do offer a link to the Visitor Center website. So if you have questions about being in Haines, what else to do, that's a good place. We have a great map, actually, on our website that shows different hikes around town, and there's churches and the different places to eat, and if you're bringing an RV, where to dump, and that kind of stuff. That's all actually on our website. There's a map that's got icons where you can see the different places where those things take place, the services and amenities that are available in Haines. And I would also encourage people to call us if they have any specific questions. We are busy. We are running around. Tomorrow morning may be hard to catch us on the phone, but we're happy to talk to people and give information.
And we'll free up your line in just a second. Jessica
no
Edwards
worries.
Telling us all about the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines. Thank you so much for all of that great information. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or something that I missed maybe?
You know, I think it's a great place to bring your family. It's something that I know that children who have a history of coming to the fair, it's a highlight of the summer. It's a wonderful all ages event. I mean, if you're a teenager, if you are a little person, if you're a parent, if you're just a single person, or if you're a grandparent or you're senior, I just would encourage everyone that there is something here for everyone, and we have an amazing, vibrant event. It's a great weekend to be in Haines. It's going to be warm, and we hope to see the region come out and enjoy the 50th anniversary fair.
Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks for having me on, Shelley. I really appreciate it.
Of course. As I mentioned before, all music on the show today will be from the Southeast Alaska Fair lineup. So here's The Price is Right by Youth Orchestra.
Thank you.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. It's about 25 minutes after the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are the design duo Marms and Meeks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And their names are Taylor Jarvis and Megan Chambers, not Marms and Meeks. So tell us a bit about your company, Marms and Meeks, since you're a relatively new local business.
We are a small business located here in Juneau. It's a side business for both Taylor and I. My full-time job is with the Arts Council next door, and Taylor works at NOAA as a marine biologist. But we kind of combined our love of art and science and made Marms and Meeks, which are our dogs' nicknames, by the way. So we love dogs, we love science, we love art, and we combined all of that, and everything we make is made out of recycled materials and features some type of marine science or inspiration from our environment. We love Alaska, obviously, and so we try to weave that in as much as possible.
That's terrific. When did you guys get started?
I think technically 3 years ago, but we've just gone really slowly in the beginning and kind of built it up little by little. And I feel like we have been operating at a pretty full production mode in the last year and a half, 2 years.
So business is good.
Yeah, it's been great.
It's been fun.
Cool. Well, what are some of the designs that our listeners might recognize around town?
Well, we were contracted recently, actually, to do the KTOO. Graphics. So we love doing that. We do a couple graphic design jobs on the side, but in general, you would probably recognize four whales that we print on nautical charts. So we've reused old nautical charts and we make prints and wall art for those. We do koozies with whales on them. We have a line of punny Valentine's cards that are pretty cute. So if you need some Valentine's Day cards, check those out. And then we do canvas products that are made out of recycled canvas from recycled water bottles and cotton. Wow. And they've got urchin designs on them and ferns.
And you've got a brand new item that's coming out tomorrow, which is what you're here to talk about today. So what is it?
Yeah, so we're coming out with a new glass. They're repurposed wine bottles, so we've teamed up with a company in California, and they have rescued wine bottles and cut them and refired them so they're nice and smooth. And we have designed an etch to put in the glasses of the Latin Long of Juno.
I think that's really great. And I've seen pictures online. They're quite lovely. And it looks like you guys have almost sold out on pre-orders, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're excited about that. And we're excited for everyone to see them. But we still have some left, so be sure to make it to the event tomorrow, starting at 4 o'clock at Amalga.
Yeah, and you'll be making more in the future.
Yes. Yeah, we have another order in now. So we'll take special orders tomorrow. So if we run out, don't despair. You just will have to wait a couple weeks to get them. But we're really excited. Every time we launch a new product, we think it's cool, but we never know if the community at large will enjoy it. So we're happy that people are excited about it.
And this one has been in the works for a while, so we're happy to finally get it on the street.
Well, what took so long? What happened between having the original idea and then actually materializing it?
Mainly other ideas in between that time.
Distractions.
Yeah, and that were more easily accessible to us at the time.
Can you say a little bit more about how you make the glasses?
Yeah, we designed the graphic that gets etched on them and have requested it in a specific place on specific colors. But other than that, since Taylor and I have full-time jobs, we don't make the glasses ourselves. But we found this company in California that makes them. And so when Taylor and I are unable to do something, then we'll find another U.S.-based, preferably as close to Alaska as possible, just because we love the West Coast. We'll find a company that can do what we want and partner with them and then purchase them and get them on the shelves for you guys.
Right. And you said, I think you said this already, the glasses are made from wine bottles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. But they're all like smoothed out. And
they're
everything.
All smooth. Yeah. And the colors are beautiful. There's like a deep teal and an amber and a clear and a dark green.
So why? What's important to you guys about repurposing? You mentioned how it plays a role in all of your work, and it's part of your philosophy. But what's personal about it to you?
Taylor and I both come from biology backgrounds. She's got an undergrad and graduate degree in marine biology, and I have a BS in biology. And, you know, we were excited about owning a small business, but we didn't want to just put things out into the world that weren't already in use. And so the idea is that we're making as little of a foot imprint, so to speak, as possible, and that you can have these awesome locally made items, but all of the materials have been already made and used in the world, and we're just repurposing them for something else that's pretty and you enjoy.
Yeah. Well, the product release party is tomorrow, 4 p.m. at Amalga Distillery. The event has a Facebook page with all the details, as well as, and your website is great too. And Amalga Distillery's website is great too. So if you pre-ordered glasses, you come and pick them up there. You'll also be selling them there.
Yep. We'll have anything that's left for sale there at the event. And we still have lots of teal available. The mixed packs are sold out right now. But yeah, come pick them up. And thanks to our host at Amalga for helping us put this party on. And we can't wait to see you. Follow us online.
Can you get a drink in the glass?
Yes. They're going to do a special cocktail, actually.
Oh, so, that's awesome. Do you know what it is?
I don't. They just got their shipment of fresh goods in today. So we'll find out tomorrow what it is.
I'm sure it'll be delicious.
But we love everything they make.
Yes. All right. Terrific. And anything else you'd like to add today?
If you want to follow us or stay up to date, then we're on Facebook and Instagram. Just search Marms and Meeks, and then our website's marmsandmeeks.com.
Taylor, Megan, thank you so much for being here today, and have a great time tomorrow. I'll probably see you there.
Thanks for having us.
This is Bird Note. An adult black-capped chickadee flies in toward its nest, carrying a beakful of fresh insects. Reaching a long-dead tree trunk, the bird disappears inside the nest cavity it's excavated with its mate and delivers the goods to the impatient chicks within. A moment later, out pops the adult. But once again, it's carrying something in its bill, what looks like a tiny white pouch. Still on the wing, the chickadee drops the object into the vegetation below. The outgoing payload was a fecal sac, a remarkable adaptation found in nesting songbirds. Nestlings, often within seconds of being fed by the adult, excrete waste in tidy little sacs with a gelatinous outer coating. The dutiful parent now switches tasks, from meal delivery to waste management. By dropping the sac a safe distance from the nest, the birds tidy the nest while discarding clues a predator might use to detect vulnerable nestlings. The fecal sac. For anyone who's ever changed a diaper, it's a simple solution we can only marvel at. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
I can't wait to ride my bike in the Douglas Dirt Derby.
Yeah, it's going to be so fun.
The course is awesome. It goes all around the Treadwell Mine Trails.
Cool. If you don't want to wait, you can just ride in the fun ride.
Kids, come on down to the Douglas Dirt Derby on Saturday, August 4th at Savico Park. Pre-register at Cycle Alaska and COPA with t-shirts for the first 100 to register. Have fun, ride hard, and help stop diabetes. Brought to you by the Juneau Freewheelers Bicycle Club.
You're tuned into a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Alicia Smith, owner of the Imagination Station, Juneau's downtown toy store. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's a beautiful day, huh?
It is that,
yes. Did you walk over from the store?
I should have. I'm embarrassed to say I didn't.
Well, sorry to put you on the spot. But yeah, tell us a little bit about the Imagination Station. For those who've never been or never even walked past it, how long have you been open? What sort of products do you sell?
Sure, yeah. So we just celebrated our 15th year downtown, and we're pretty much a neighborhood toy store. We sell specialty toys really for all ages, from newborn all the way up. We have things for adults as well. And when I say specialty toys, I mean things that are maybe a little bit less common, not a lot of plastic, things that maybe make you think a little bit or are more open-ended or better quality or just, you know, a little quirky.
Gotcha. And you're open all year round, is that correct?
We are open year round, 7 days a week. We have local employees that are, you know, mothers, grandmothers, retired teachers, just fun people. And we gift wrap always because really birthday presents and Christmas presents are our bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, what motivated you to open a game and toy store?
Well, you know, I have a background in retail. And then I had two children and a lot of energy. So when they were 1 and 3 and I figured out that, you know, we really didn't have a neighborhood toy store in Juneau and it's something that we needed, I just did it.
So what do you like about being on Franklin Street, right in the heart of the business district, especially during tourist season?
Yeah, you know, I love the feel of a downtown community. I feel like it's the heart of downtown, or of Juneau, I'm sorry. It's small businesses, and of course, I love also that we have seasons. I love that we have this sort of busy summer season, although I would say we're more of a local store. We enjoy seeing all those visitors come through. And then it quiets down in the fall, and then Christmas is crazy. So it's just kind of fun to have those sort of different phases. And I just feel like, you know, downtown is just where I want to be. I want to be at the heart of Juneau. So.
And selling toys.
Huh? And selling toys.
What are some of the, what are some of your most popular products?
I knew you were going to ask that question. And I always blank out, so I took notes. There's always something that's kind of up there and out there. And this year it's Floof. It's actually a product that we had a couple years ago. And then all of a sudden it resurged. And it's just like a really soft molding compound that never dries out. And along that same vein, Crazy Air and Thinking Putty, is super popular. It's a combination of like Silly Putty and science. So all different kinds, magnetic or color changing or UV reactive. Those are really fun. Cooperative games for younger kids and strategic games for older kids and us adults that like to play games are super popular. We do a lot of those. We have a huge wall of it. One more thing, if I were going to pick one more thing, maybe Two Bros Bows, which is a really cool little company out of Washington created by two brothers. They're bows and arrows that are soft on the end but shoot really well.
Oh.
Yeah, they're cool. Yeah.
All that stuff sounds cool. And those were some sort of unexpected answers. I don't know what I thought you were going to say. But.
Well, I mean, we also have – we have Lego and we have Playmobil. Yeah. And those are always popular as well. Yeah.
Fun. All right. But you don't just sell toys. You also coordinate some creative endeavors and activities for our Juno youth, your younger clientele. So why don't you tell us a bit about what you've got coming up?
Sure. We try to do things throughout the year, but really our biggest or maybe most continuous thing that we've done is called Make It Mondays. I believe this is the 9th summer that we've done it. And every Monday morning from 10 to noon, which is kind of the quietest time of the week, we host a free craft and activity morning. And every week it's a different theme, mostly based off of things that we sell, but also based off of just like the upcoming Make It Monday. We just call our creativity day. We usually do it towards the end of the summer every year. And we just put out all kinds of different craft items and just items like old wrapping paper rolls and just all kinds of things. And we just say, go kids, what can you make? And you'd be amazed at what comes out of that day. But so these events, we host them every Monday morning. They're free. Come on down. We put on Facebook what the theme of the week is. And we give a suggestion for age, but we always try to have something available. Even if that specific craft is for 5 and up, we always have something available for younger kids as well and something a little more advanced for older kids. So I'd say anywhere from 2 to 10
That's
years
great.
Of age. Yeah.
And then on July 30th, you've got Creativity Day coming up.
That's the one I was talking about.
Okay,
that's
sorry.
Just open-ended, free. Usually we have something like clothespin animals or metallic space art, but Creativity Day is just, we're going to have all the metallic stuff out. We're going to have all the animal stuff. We're going to have all kinds of stuff out, and we're going to see, let the kids direct what they want to make.
So, what's the coolest thing you've ever seen come out of that?
You know, one year we had an entire robot come out of Creativity Day. He was made out of all different kinds of materials. And we had a young man that spent all 2 hours. Yeah, I think that's the coolest thing I've seen come out.
Wow. And how about make your own Crazy Errand Putty?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier that Crazy Errand Putty, which is that combination of silly putty and science, is very popular. So we're really excited. We did it one other time 2 years ago to have this activity where you can come in, you get a putty base, and then you get to add colors to it. You can add a compound that makes it color changing, where it changes with heat or cold. You can add sparkle and halogenic properties. And so it's just going to be really interesting combination of maybe crafts and chemistry. And
so that's coming up on August 6th.
And that'll be August 6th. And that'll be the end of our Make It Monday season this year. Yeah.
Okay. So that's great. Make It Mondays is every Monday, 10 a.m. to 12?
Every Monday in the summer to 12, from all the way from the beginning of June through the first week of August.
Yep. Yeah. And some good ones coming up are July 30th, Creativity Day, and August 6th, Make Your Own Crazy Errand Putty. And all of these activities are free.
Always free.
What do parents need to know before bringing their kiddos out to this stuff?
I guess the only thing you need to know is that parents do need to, or adults do need to, stay with the kids. Just, we're not licensed to watch them. And usually parents want to join in and do the craft too. So other than that, that's really all you need to know. Just come into the store. We'll direct you back where it is, and please join us.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing what you do. I love your store. I've been there myself a couple times trying to track down different board games, and I just it's really fun in there. And so
Thank you.
That you're a part of our downtown community. Well, is there anything else you'd like to mention while you're here?
Just thank you, Juno. It's been a great 15 years, and we're having a good time. So come down and see us.
Thanks for being here, Alicia. Here's a track called The Whistleblower from the McDades, who will be playing at the Southeast Alaska State Fair this weekend.
Thank you. Come join the Juno Arts and Humanities Council for the 7th Summer Block Party of 2018 this Friday, July 27th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. in the Centennial Hall Courtyard or the Jack Main Hall if the rains are falling. Featuring live music with Tom Loker, Allison Holtkamp, Erica Lee, and David Shakely Early, and many interesting products from an exciting array of local Juno merchants. There will be a beer garden and special cocktails, lawn games, and a whole lot more fun. Celebrate the summer and help Juno build the new Jack, sponsored by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 13 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And my next guest is Daniel Ruckert, and he is with Mainly Marathons. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Hi, thank you for welcoming me.
You're welcome. So you're with Mainly Marathons, and I know a few people have seen you guys out and about in Juno these last couple days. What is Mainly Marathons?
Mainly Marathons is a company that travels the United States putting on races. We go to all 50 states. We have 84 races, and we put on a series of races. There's 14 different series, and this is our first Alaska series. It is four races, two of which have been taking place at Savico Park, and then we're doing two at Mendenhall River Community School, which is going to go on the bike path there along the highway, and then heading off onto a sidewalk, and then we do anywhere from a 5K all the way up to a 50K distance.
That seems pretty unique for a running group, and you traveled all 50 states, is that correct?
That is correct, yep, and this is our first time in Alaska. We've been doing the other 49 for the last few years, and then this was our first time to be able to come to Alaska, and a lot of our runners like to do multiple races right in a row. Many of them are working on getting 50 states and different distances, most of which is a marathon distance. And so this is a way that they can knock out four Alaska races right in a row. And then there's also the Juno Marathon that they've seen is putting on Saturday, which many of our runners, probably about a dozen to about maybe 20 of our runners will be running that as well. And then heading over to the Wrangell Marathon on Sunday as well, so they can get six races in Alaska all back to back.
That's incredible. I've never heard of this. Is there a reason why people do a series of runs in the same town or place instead of one and done?
I think they like the added challenge, and then we have a few world record holders that are traveling with us. So we have one that Nick Nicholson, who's from England, actually flew over and is running three of the races this week, and he's a world record holder for most amount of marathons in a year, and then also most amount of 50Ks, which is 31.2 miles in a year as well. And so he keeps resetting his own record and extending it. And so our series of races allows him to do those types of things. Then we also have Marathon Larry, who is with us, was a former world record holder, and he has over 2,000 career marathons, and so he's able to continue extending that number by traveling with us and doing our series of races. And so that's some of the things why people run with us, and then it's also just having our fun community of runners that are cheering each other on. It's kind of like a local running community that travels the country together.
That's so cool. How many people are here with you as part of Mainly Marathons?
So we've been having about 60 the last 2 days. Yesterday when I did the announcements, I checked in with the runner and asked if anyone was from Alaska. And surprisingly, we didn't have a single person from Alaska, although we had about 60 different runners with us. So we've had about 35 to 40 different states represented in a couple different countries. We had another gentleman that runs with us quite a bit that came in, flew in from Brazil, and then another friend that is with him is going to be flying in from Brazil and joining us tomorrow as well as we go to the Mendenhall River Community School. And so we get people from all over, and so we're hoping to get some locals too, because we do offer $10 discount for the 5K and 10Ks for locals, and then $20 off for the half or longer, so half marathon or 50K distances, locals would get $20 off.
That's great. How are you enjoying running in Alaska?
Oh, fantastic. I keep hearing about how the weather is so ideal in that it's about the perfect week, and it absolutely has been. It's really pretty. The temperatures are mild when the runners start in the morning, and then 13, 18 temperatures as the race gets going on its way. And it's just the clear skies. It's been absolutely perfect across. So we're looking forward to coming next year as well.
Yeah, you're quite lucky, actually, to get such great weather for running. I'm sure you have, if you've run in all 50 states, you've run in all kinds of different weather conditions. But, yeah, it could have been a lot worse for you. So what else?
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
So you've got two or three more runs planned while you're here. Could you go over the details about those again, please?
Yep. So for the day three and four of our Alaska series, so day three will be tomorrow at the Mendenhall River Community Schools where we'll be starting. The race starts at 7. We allow people for same-day registrations and for to pick up their packets starting at 6 a.m., and then the race will start promptly at 7. The registration process only takes about 5 to maybe 10 minutes to get registered and get your shirt and medal. And speaking of the medals, we have some award-winning medals. They make a chain, and so you get a starter medal, which is your traditional ribbon or lanyard with the medal hanging from it, and then it connects to, that has our Alaska Series badge on it, and then another medal connects to it depending on what day or how many days you do. And so tomorrow's animal is a wolf, and then it has Alaskan kind of mountain scene in the background inside the wolf cutout that connects to the Alaska Series badge, and then it has another medal that goes on to the bottom of that. So for running one race with us, you actually get three medals. And anyone that's doing their first half or first full marathon ever will get additional two medals too. So people, if they are interested in trying out our races, that's a good way to get a bunch of medals all at once. And also, we don't have any time limits for any distance that is marathon or less. So if people are scared that it might take too long or it's a high-pressure race, ours are really laid back and slow races, and everyone's cheering each other on, and there's no pressure for times or trying to beat cutoff times or anything like that.
Great.
Well, also, day four will be at that same location, too.
Okay, so that's the Mendenhall River Community School, and day three starts at 7 a.m. Does day four also start at 7 a.m.?
Correct, yep. So day four will be the same, and that's on Friday. Same location, same start time, and same kind of registration process for those that are interested.
And then the marathon and half marathon is this Saturday, and is that taking place on Douglas Island?
Yep, that will be at Savico Park. And Dave Epstein is actually the individual that's putting that on. So it's separate from us, but we wanted to not make sure to step on anyone's toes and actually support the local running scene. And so we combined our races right next to each other so runners would be able to enjoy both sets of races.
That's great. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for talking to me today. And I checked out your website. All the details for the runs are there. And I hope you have a great time in Juneau along with your running group. And again, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
Perfect. Thank you for your time as well. And I hope you have a great rest of the day.
All right. And thanks for bringing the good weather. We do appreciate that.
Perfect. Yes. Thank you for having it.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. All right. Coming up next, we've got Para Ti by a Leche de Tigre. They'll be playing at Southeast Alaska State Fair this weekend.
Vamos con el corazón. Vamos juntos, nunca aparte. Nos gusta cantar, bailar, tocar todo esto con usted.
Thank you so much for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. In case you were wondering, we featured music by Youth Orchestra, the McDades, and right now playing in the background is Leche de Tigre, all three of those bands and much, much more playing at the Southeast Alaska State Fair this weekend. On tomorrow's show, Kate Inge will be here with our weekly update from Juno Public Library. We'll hear about this weekend's Gathering of the Drums, hosted by Woosh Jean Dance Group. Juno Makerspace will highlight their upcoming activities, such as the Drone Meetup and Jump Weekend Film Collaborative. And we'll get our weekly arts and culture activities update, of course, on Arts Up. And tomorrow night at 7 p.m. on KTOO, tune in for the Mudroom Season 7 sampler. If you'd like to be on a Juno Afternoon, you can go to ktoo.org and click Contact Us. And a reminder that we are on our summer schedule through August with live shows Wednesday, Thursday, and Fridays, and special programming on Mondays and Tuesdays. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.